Okay, everyone, Parshas Korach, Perek Tes Zayin, Pasuk Yud Beis. The Pasuk says, Vayishlach Moshe Likro L'dosan V'aviram B'nei Aliyah V'ayomru Lo Na'aleh. It's toward the beginning of the Parsha. We all know that Korach made a massive mistake in what he was doing. We know that he had 250 men with him. We know that the B'nei Levi made their complaint, and Moshe Rabbeinu told them, Rav Lachem B'nei Levi. But doesn't an Aviram come out of nowhere? And seemingly, these are people that should not have had a claim whatsoever. What did Shevet Reuven want over here? What were they asking for? Were they asking for the Bechor status? But Bechor status went to the firstborn, not Reuven. If they were asking for the double portion, that was taken away before this. It's strange as anything that Dustin Aviram had any claim whatsoever over here. And the real question is why Moshe Rabbeinu felt the need to go directly to Dustin Aviram. He doesn't go to Korach directly or to the Levium directly. He goes to Dustin Aviram directly, not On Ben Pelas or anybody else. And their answer of Lo Na'aleh, as if we're not going up. What does that mean, Lo Na'aleh? We're not going up to what and to where and why? What does Lo Na'aleh mean? Now, granted, they have two other psukim that come after this in Pasuk Yud Gimel and Pasuk Yud Dalet, but what was the response that happened? And something should bother you about Dustin and Aviram. When looking through every parsha, you should have the reaction that anybody should. You look at these two guys who went through Mitzrayim, saw everything during the Makos and Kriyas Yamsuf, were aware of the Anani HaKavod around them, the Be'er Shel Miriam that gave them water in the Mun, and yet still were always involved in any fight that came up in Klal Yisrael. What in the world is up with them? And then when Moshe Rabbeinu goes to them, the leader of everyone, the one who speaks to God, a Navi that no one could deny, that there's something going on with Moshe. And I find it so strange when people go along and they tell me, well, they didn't believe that God spoke to Moshe. That cannot be. That's ridiculously impossible. Korach, they saw that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's impossible to deny that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when they saw everything he did, for them to say that they're going to be any better, it's like, it's got to be something more than that. There has to be a cautionary tale that we're learning from Dustin Aviram. And the real lesson we're going to learn from tonight is what can happen to us. What makes us into our own Dustin and Avirams in our own lives that makes us like them, even though obviously we don't have a Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't have this and that and the other? What becomes us when we have something like this? So Targum Yonason says, and knows Ben Uziel, this message was sent to them asking them to come to Moshe Rabbeinu to Beis Din HaGadol. They wanted to be judged. Dustin and Avira, Moshe Rabbeinu was going up to them and saying, judge me, take me to court, tell me a claim, bring me to court and tell me what I did wrong. See, Korach, I get what his complaint is. Nepotism. I understand that complaint. He thinks that I gave the Kuna Gedola to Aaron. He thinks that I gave the leadership of some of the Kohanim to my cousins. It seems like my Shevet within Levi, Kehas, is getting all the positions and not Gershon and not the other people of Kehas, but specifically through Amram. And I get that. That claim I can hear. It's wrong, but I can hear the claim. But you, Dustin Aviram, why are you claiming anything? He said, take me to Beis Din and go through. The response was that they didn't have a claim. Lo Na'aleh, we're not going to Beis Din. We just like complaining. We just like going up and going up against you and seeing what your reaction is going to be. And when he heard that, he said, I can't handle you anymore. I can't handle this anymore. I mean, I could take it the first couple times, but when they said the words, Lo Na'aleh, we're just not going up. Why not? We just don't want to. That already bothered him to the core. He said, I didn't do anything here. I didn't do anything. Lo chamor echod nasasi mehem. I didn't take one donkey from them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't listen to their prayers. Al tefen al minchasam. Such people should not be listened to. The Ramban says that Moshe Rabbeinu had already responded to Korach and the B'nai Levi. He did send a message to Korach and the B'nai Levi, telling them what to do the next morning in regards to the Ketores. You're going to take the Ketores next morning, you're going to burn the Ketores, all 250 men plus Korach, we're going to bring this Ketores along with Aaron, and God was going to, so to speak, choose between them, find the guy that he wanted. But not so by Dustin and Aviram. Dustin and Aviram was a different story altogether. When Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to B'nai Levi, and he spoke to the B'nai Levi, and he gave them Musar, going up against them and saying, why do you guys do this, etc., Dustin and Aviram, who had a different argument altogether, the argument of Reuven, the argument that they were involved with over here, they walked away. Says the Ramban, they had nothing to do with this. They weren't going to be part of the 250 men. They weren't planning on being Kohanim. That was never their plan in the first place. They never wanted something like that. Dustin and Aviram went back to their camps. That's what happened to them. And they themselves, right, just walked away. Moshe Rabbeinu had to send a message to them because they were no longer there. Moshe wanted to. He was speaking to Korach, talking to the 250 men, telling them what to do, and then he turned to Dasan Aviram, and they weren't there anymore. Thus, Vayishlach Moshe Likro LeDasan Aviram. He sent a message to them, and he invited them, and he said, guys, come back to me. I know it was hard. I know that that took a long time. Come back to me. I want to speak to you about what's going on right now. As for On Ben Peles, what happened to him? On Ben Peles, we all know, he was also a follower. He wasn't planning on being a Kohen. He never wanted to bring the Ketores. He was just following where everybody else was going. And when he saw the lull, the break in the middle, he started having his doubts. And we all know the Medrash. He went home. He spoke to his wife. His wife said to him, what's the point? If you go there, right, if you end up going to with Korach, then what are you going to be? You're going to be second to Korach? If you go with Dasan Aviram, you're going to be second to Dasan Aviram. Don't be second to anyone. Stay home. Stay with me. If you're going to be second to anyone, be second to Moshe Rabbeinu. And On Ben Peles stayed home at the advice of his wife, and that's the reason why he was never sent to. He's involved in the beginning. Vayikach Korach and Dasan Aviram, but On Ben Peles mibnei Ruvain, right? He was mentioned in the beginning, but after that he was gone, says the Ramban, because he really didn't have anything to do after this point. There was nothing there. Korach and his people, Dasan Aviram, but On Ben Peles is gone, yeah.
She uncovered her hair, and that's why.
She stood in front of the gate, in front of their house, and uncovered her hair so that the people who were still holy wouldn't come by. Yeah, exactly.
But he still wanted to go, but she...
Yeah, 100%, 100%. That's exactly what happened. That's this story. That's where it comes from, yeah.
Why? He wasn't second to Moshe.
Who?
On Ben
Peles. Yeah, but at least if you're going to be... Whatever, not second, not tertiary, but meaning tertiary, you'd be below Moshe Rabbeinu. If you're going to be below Moshe Rabbeinu, then be all the way down. You don't have to be somebody who's going to be there. You're going to be second anyway, so what's the point? That's what she was telling
him. I'd be higher up in the standings.
Higher up in the standings. That's what she was claiming. She was claiming, how do you know you're going to be the second? How do you know you're going to get anything? So that's that. Rabbeinu Ephraim suggests that when On Ben Peles heard what Moshe Rabbeinu said about those 250 men, etc., and everything like that, he knew this is going to be bad. The Ketores is what killed Nadav and Avihu. Nadav and Avihu, the two sons of Aaron, which I always find absolutely shocking that people mess this up all the time. And instead of saying Nadav and Avihu, they say Dasan and Aviram. And instead of saying Dasan and Aviram, they say Nadav and Avihu. You ever notice people do that all the time? There's got to be something to it. I have no clue what it is, but there's got to be a connection to it. I can't figure it out. But Nadav and Avihu messed up with the Ketores. And look what happened to them. They died. Dasan and Aviram knew, they absolutely knew that something was going to happen. When On Ben Peles saw that, On Ben Peles stayed as far away as he could. He said, if the Ketores is involved, I'm out. He knew something bad was going to happen from that point on. Midrash Tanchuma Yashan Tesvav says, Moshe Rabbeinu went to Korach to argue with him, but Korach refused to respond. When he went up to him, he wanted to speak to him. Korach knew, if I get into an argument with this guy, Moshe Rabbeinu is a super genius who knows everything in the world. Anything I say, he's going to knock me down. So Korach was silent. He just stared at him. There is nothing more infuriating. And maybe you've been a part of an argument like this before, where you're trying to argue with a person and the other person will not talk, will not speak. Don't you see my point? And just that. Nothing more. Nothing more infuriating. You want to argue with the guy. You want him to say something back to you so you can argue back with him, but he refuses. He refuses to talk. Such a thing is so infuriating. When Moshe Rabbeinu was speaking to Korach, and Korach refused to say anything back. Note, by the way, throughout the entire parsha, you do not have a word of Korach. Not one word. We have nothing except for Vayikach Korach. There is nothing else about him. We don't know anything about this guy. And he's this person that's there. Says the Medrash Tanchuma, he didn't speak on purpose. To which Moshe Rabbeinu then sent to Dasan Aviram and said, okay, if I can't get anything out of Korach, Dasan Aviram, what do you guys have to say? And Dasan Aviram did have a lot to say. Lo nala, we're not going up. Even if you would blind our eyes, we're not going up there. So we're not listening to a word that you have to say. That was the words that he wanted to give over. That's when Moshe Rabbeinu went to him, only after realizing that Korach wasn't going to say anything whatsoever. Malbim says, Dasan Aviram only walked away when Moshe Rabbeinu responded to Korach and said Moshe Rabbeinu had to go through. As the Ramban said, he went through. Their issue, he says, was the firstborn issue. And since they knew that issue was not in the hands of Moshe Rabbeinu to give to them. They couldn't become firstborns again. They weren't going to get a double lot in Eretz Yisrael. And they knew that Reuven had lost out on everything. And they were from Sheva Reuven. They said, Moshe Rabbeinu, we have nothing to say to you. You can't do anything for us anyway. We just don't want to speak to you. There's no point to us getting involved. Rashi says over here that the reason why Moshe went to Dasan and Aviram is to not allow Machlokes to continue. When there's an argument, the best thing to do is to squash it to destroy it, to knock it down right then and there. Yes, it's a little more awkward. Yes, you may have to take that walk of shame that people have to do when they realize that they're involved with the machlokas, but it's much, much better to be involved and to stop the fight immediately than it is to do it right, to do it years later, months later, and who knows? Who knows what's going to be then? Rashi says he used words of appeasement. He spoke to them all the time to make sure that they would know exactly what it's going to be, and nothing worked. Absolutely nothing worked. Mayana Shel Torah says, from the Rebbe of Vorka, that this must have been nearly impossible for Moshe Rabbeinu to do. Dustin and Aviram, this is not their first rodeo. This is not the first time they've been involved with Moshe. Dustin and Aviram were the ones that caused Moshe Rabbeinu to be kicked out of Egypt in the first place. Remember, they're the ones who spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe to Paro that caused them to be kicked out of the land. He was exiled for over 40 years, possibly even 60 years, out of Mitzrayim because of Dustin and Aviram. Dustin and Aviram are the ones that kept telling Paro all the little things that are going on with Klal Yisrael. And according to some portion, they didn't even leave Mitzrayim with the rest of the Jews. They stayed in Mitzrayim. Targum Yonos Ben Uziel says there were two Jews who stayed as spies for Paro in Mitzrayim. They complained about the mun. They left over the mun. They did some horrible things. This is not the first time that Dustin and Aviram have gotten up. For Moshe Rabbeinu to walk to them, to go to them and to say, I want to speak to you guys. I want to reach out to you. I want to help you. Says Rabbi Vorka, that showed that anyone can do such a thing. Even though Moshe Rabbeinu was as humble as he was, it's a sign of true greatness where you know the other person is wrong. You know it. You know the other person is absolutely wrong. And it makes no difference. You still go and you try to make peace with them. In the Sefer Zichron LaMoshe, the page 35, the second column, he brings from the Chassam Sofer, there's no such thing as chazaka when it comes to machlokas. You try to get appeasement. You try to appease a guy once. You try to appease him a second time. Try to make peace a third time. It doesn't mean he won't make peace with you the fourth time. Yes, when it comes to asking for mechila, the Gemara says you can stop after three times. You ask somebody for mechila and he won't be mochel you once or twice or three times, that's fine. But to make peace, you have to go 100 times if you need to. Keep going up to a person and try and try and try. And even though you didn't do it then, maybe sometime it'll succeed. He has a makor from this, says the Chassam Sofer, from the Medrash. In Toras Moshe, he says, there were three times that Moshe Rabbeinu went head-to-head against Dustin Aviram. As we said, when he was in Mitzrayim and he spoke Lashon Hara. Number two, when he was leaving Paro's palace, they were the Nitzim v'Nitzavim at the end of Parsha Shmos. And of course, regarding the mun itself. The third time, you'd think no warning is necessary anymore. And still Moshe Rabbeinu sent a message to them. And guys, cease and desist. Stop. Stop what you're doing. I can't handle this anymore. And he sent it to them. And nonetheless, again, the lesson behind it is no matter how adamant, how obstinate the other side is, you have to be able to go up to him and try to make peace in some way, shape, or form. And I'm not saying this out of din. I'm doing it lifnim mishuras din. The best thing to do is to stop anything you can as soon as you possibly can. The Belzer Rebbe says the lesson learned is clearly that gedolim have to go to even their worst enemies and speak to them and say, what can I do? How can I help? We see this quite often in the Gemara in Yuma, Pei Zayin, Amud Aleph. Rav did this to a butcher. He went up to a butcher and he asked for forgiveness, and the butcher would not forgive him and even picked up a cleaver to come after Rav. Luckily, he's Rav, so Rav killed him. But aside from that, right, maybe that's even better, you know? Go to your enemy and try to make peace, and if not, kill him. No, that's not a quote. So either way, but Rav did that. Rav did everything he was supposed to do and tried to make peace with the guy, and it only came into blows, so to speak. It came into a horrible situation when the guy escalated it by making it a little bit worse. Says the Belzer Rebbe, you go through. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says this was all strategy, and tremendous strategy on the part of Moshe Rabbeinu. He wanted to speak to Dustin Aviram privately. He knew that he would be more effective if he spoke to him privately than if he would speak to him together with an audience and everything like that. He was willing to go to Korach because he knew what Korach's sign was. Dustin Aviram, he really didn't know. So his strategy was, let me go privately to Dustin and Aviram. Maybe there's something that I did to them that I don't know about. And that way, I'll get rid of that issue and everything will be okay. And again, unfortunately, that was not the issue. That was not the issue whatsoever. The Shlokar, yeah, what's up?
How is it possible that Dustin Aviram alive?
We'll get
so
to it because of Mitzrayim. Yeah, give me a second. I'll get to it. The Shlach Kadosh says something amazing. When you get into a machlokas, a fight, right? The word machlokas stands for everything that's about to happen. Here's the idea, and he says an unbelievable idea. A mem has a tiny, tiny little opening. on the side. Obviously, it's almost closed. Tiny, tiny little opening right over there. That means that at first there's only a small breach in their friendship. There's a fight, and yes, something happened. There's a little breach, but the mem is fully closed. There's still a friendship there. There's just a tiny little breach. But eventually, if you don't fix it, it turns into a ches. There's a huge gaping hole in the bottom, and everything starts falling out. Once that happens, it's first felt in Shemayim. The Lamed goes all the way up to Shemayim. It's felt all the way up in Shemayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tries to get involved to try to make peace between the two. And when that doesn't happen, there's a kuf. It goes all the way down, right? And anybody on earth that has the ability to get involved, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tries to get them involved in that way. If not spiritually, then physically, people go up to them and try to make. But if you wait too long, it becomes a suf. And the suf is in such a way where it's two-legged and it's almost like pushing out. It's going to last for a very, very long time and it's not going to stop. What needs to happen is to add a vav into the word machlokas. A vav almost looks like a scepter, a mate, a makil, a staff that a person needs to bring inside to stop it, so to speak, and to say, no, we're not going to let this happen. There needs to be some part, some party that has to be involved to make sure that that doesn't happen that way, and in a way that refers to our own staff toward the end of the parsha. But it's an amazing idea just from the word machlokas, says the Shlach HaKadosh how it works. Yeah, Dov. In other words, the vav itself, yeah. Not as far. You know how like the lamed, it goes above the letter spectrum, you know, it like goes into the other. That's why it refers to Shemayim. And the kuf also goes below. And that's why it refers to down below. As opposed to a vav that's just on the spectrum, just right there. So I guess that's the idea behind it. I mean, I don't know. I wish I knew the Shlach others really well. But I think that's the idea of what he was trying to get at. And that's the idea behind it. Rav Schwab asked the question, and I'm not really going to go into it. When do you stand your ground? And you say, like, your argument is ridiculous, and I'm not going to get involved with it. There are obviously times where you should not fight, where there is no point to fighting, because the other side is so absolutely ridiculous, there's nothing to talk about. At what point does it become so ridiculous that you can't argue the point with somebody? There are times where, obviously, I'm dealing with certain people in my position as a Rav or a Rebbe in a yeshiva for both high school and Beis Medrash, where the arguments that I'm given don't make much sense. So do I argue that point, or do I just secede and say, like, okay, listen, I hear you, let's go on. Do I just walk away from the argument and not get involved? Meaning, was Moshe Rabbeinu right to make this a real argument by sending a message? Maybe they couldn't hear him. Maybe there are times where you're supposed to say, you know, like, let's take a step back. Let's wait a few hours, days, and whatever it is. Let's think about this. Let's calm down a little bit and then get more involved. When does that happen? And Rav Schwab has a very, very nice way of looking at it and how he goes through. He says, again, we're looking at Dustin and Aviram. Dustin and Aviram were not involved with the Egel Azov. They weren't killed along with everybody else. Dustin and Aviram left Mitzrayim. They didn't die among the 4/5 of Bnei Yisrael that left Mitzrayim. There was no issue of them in Mitzrayim regarding this point of wanting to leave. They wanted to leave. There was no issue of them with the Egel Azov. The Meraglim, that seems to be, that wasn't them. The Misonanim, and the people that were Hisavu Taiva in Parshas Baaloscha, we don't see Dustin and Aviram anywhere. And they didn't die among all the people that died. Dustin and Aviram were not involved in some major, major machlokesim. But they got up here by Korach. Rav Schwab says, when you see a person who is really good and stands for some great things, but there's something wrong, he had an argument with Moshe Rabbeinu himself, that's when you get involved. It's me, said Moshe Rabbeinu. I get this. You're not arguing with God because you're not involved with the Egel Azov. You believe God's word about Eretz Yisrael. You wanted to leave Mitzrayim. So it's me, Moshe Rabbeinu told them. And if it's me, then let's talk. That's when you get involved in a machlokas. You get involved and you talk to the other side if there's something there to talk to. If there's somebody there and you know they're chashev, as bad as Dustin and Aviram are, there was a greatness to them, a true greatness to them. And it's something that they couldn't put their fingers on. And we can't put our fingers on it. But there's something there. You know, there's a famous Hasidish Sefer that's from a long time ago. I believe it's the Be'er Mayim Chaim that says that when Mashiach comes, we're going to understand all of the bad guys in the Torah. Anybody who's written in the Torah, you know how much, I've said this before, you know how badly I wish I were Paro? Like, granted, Paro went through a lot of garbage, and it was a lot of horrible punishments. I don't wish upon myself any of the Makos. But to be mentioned that many times in the Torah, you wouldn't want to be. There were great men in Klal Yisrael that didn't get to be mentioned. There's a greatness to Paro, and he messed it up, but he's awesome. To be a Korach, to be a Dathan and Abiram, to be anybody who's mentioned in the Torah. It's not like we're just going to mention Stam a guy. Like, there's Jim. Hey, Jim. Jim made it into the Torah today. Jim doesn't make it into the Torah. That's why there is no Jim in the Torah. Did you know that? That's the reason why. If you ever ask that Shiloh, that's the reason why. Because there's no point to having him in the Torah. There's only greatness in the Torah. There's greatness like Moshe Rabbeinu, and there's greatness in the opposite spectrum of Aparo. And there's a greatness there. For Dathan and Abiram to make it into the Torah means they are awesome people. For them to be put up there with Korach, everybody asks the question, Korach's going to go to Dathan and Abiram? Those are the worst people to go to. No, there was a greatness there, a greatness that we make a mistake and we say the words Nadav and Avihu instead of Dathan and Abiram when we mention their names. We mention them as the sons of Aaron, the great people out there. And I don't think that's so far off from the truth. Because they were great people, we just don't understand them. And in the future, maybe, we're going to be able to understand them a little bit better. Yeah.
Can they have greatness without having Yichus from Moshe Rabbeinu? Because, right, like, that's the Korach.
Yeah.
I think, listen,
one of those things, and again, I'm not getting into the full Hasidic side, but yes, I mean, every person in Klal Yisrael was connected to Moshe. When we say that Moshe was equal to 600,000 Jews, they were connected to Moshe somehow.
But the people, the Korach and his cohorts were not.
Yeah, that's the line. And the Hasidim said that they weren't connected, and that's why there was a disconnect.
Right?
And I hear that. And it's possible that Dathan and Abiram were also part of that disconnect. There's a famous Rav Wolfson in Emunah Tzitach on this week's Parsha about how Dathan and Abiram were disconnected. But there had to be something. They were part of Klal Yisrael for this long. Think about this. They donated to the Mishkan. Their gold is in the Mishkan. We don't know where. Can you imagine if, like, we come to the times of Olam Haba Mashiach, and he comes in and he's like, hey, guys, look at that part of the Kruvim. You see that part of the wing? That's Dathan. The other part of the wing is Aviram. That's their donations to the Mishkan. Like, we don't get these things. We have absolutely no idea. But they're there. They were part of all this. There's a greatness to them, and we just don't get it. I don't think we should ever emulate them, especially not in these types of regards and arguing in that way. But the concept, the idea, and Rav Schwab is saying this in such a way, he felt like there was something there. There was a low l'shem shemaim aspect, but there was something great there. Yes?
Can we say another answer of, like we say in the Gemara of Benitzia, the lady who asked God, who was, like, you're so fat.
Does anybody know that Gemara? Pei Dalim and Al? Yeah, we're not going to talk about that. Then the matron woman who went up to Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, right, and asked him with Rebbe Yishmael, Rebbe Yossi, right, you guys are so big, your children are not your children, right, to which they said, okay, whatever, we don't have to go into it. So regardless, right, it leads to a very, very interesting discussion in the Gemara, which I really didn't want to bring up today. Thank you. But yes, obviously, there are certain times you answer and certain times you don't. This didn't fit into that category, because that category is not only were they being made fun of, but their children were going to be looked at as mamzerim. That's why Rebbe and Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, or Rebbe Yishmael, Rebbe Yossi, you have to speak up and say, no, that's not true, because that's something that's there that didn't apply over here by the son of Yerim, what Moshe Rabbeinu were saying over here. Okay, the Ma'aril. Again, a Hasidic Sefer. There's not a Ma'aril disc in the Ma'aril. He brings down something over here. Two really interesting points that I'm not even so sure. I don't fully understand. Likro l'dasan v'avirim. By Yishlach Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu sent a message. Likro l'dasan v'avirim. Now listen to what he says over here. First, Moshe's plan was to change their names. This is what he says. His plan was to go up to Dathan and Abiram and say, guys, Dathan just ain't working for you right now. Abiram, you guys are really, really not doing well. If we change your names, maybe we'll change your mazel. Maybe you'll become different people. So Likro, LeDathan VaAviram, he wanted to call them out, Ben Eliyav. From now on, guys, you're not going to be known as Dathan or Abiram anymore. I want to call you Ben Eliyav. You'll be better than that. You're going to be better people from now on because of that. So if we can change your name, I think everything will be different. Crazy, right? Never thought that way. Why would anybody think that way? But that's what he told them. I want to call you something different. Second, he tried to connect them to their dad. He said, guys, you know your father? Your dad's Eliyav. We don't know what Eliyav is, but they must have known, I hope, right? They knew. Our father's Eliyav. They said, go back to your father. Look at your father. You think your father would be okay with you arguing like this? You think he's fine with what you're doing over here? Go back to him and ask Eliyav what he thinks about this. And when Dathan and Abiram said, Lo na'aleh, that means we're not changing our names and we're not going back to our dead to ask him anything. That's when Moshe Rabbeinu said, oh, you're disconnecting from your roots. You're disconnecting from your parents and your grandparents and your great-grandparents. He said, then you're nothing to me. Then you're nothing. If you disconnect completely and you don't want to get back together with your parents, then we have nothing to talk about. That means that you're not part of Klal Yisrael in my mind. Scary, but that's the idea. The idea that Mariel said, you have no respect, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. It's an unreal line that a way to stop an argument is simply put to go up to the person and say, what would your father say about this? Now, hopefully the father's a good person, right? But that's a great way of getting involved and saying, what would your dad do? Would your dad do this or would your dad not do this? And if your dad wouldn't do this, great. And if your dad would do this, then be different. That's the way to do it. And switch the name, so to speak, to get there in something else. Yeah.
Isn't it extremely annoying to constantly be compared to a person that's like better than you? Oh, you're not as good as
me. I'm sorry. You know, it happens all the time. There's just nothing you can do about it. Yeah, obviously, that's going to be the hardest thing in the world. Like, any time you have something that goes through, but nonetheless, you can do it once. I never go up to guys in my shir and say to them, hey, if only you could be like your brother. That's the worst thing in the world that anyone could say to anybody, right? And the truth is, obviously, there's a greatness to everybody that is not like their brother. In fact, I give brachas on Yom Kippur night, like when they do, you know, Lashana Tova, Tikasav, Zechosim, and whatever it is, and everybody shakes hands and whatever it is, I give like a little bracha, and usually sometimes it's effective, sometimes whatever. Like, I'll say to the person, 99% of the time, if I see somebody who I know has an issue with their older brother being their older brother as it is, and everybody looks at them as the younger brother, I say, you should not be like your brother. Right? I remember one guy was like, what? Why? I want to be like my brother. And I'm like, oh, that backfired. But normally, that's like the greatest thing in the world to say, that it's like, you don't want to be like that. I totally get it. I hear, you got to forge your own path, and that's definitely true. But to say that you should look at your father and say, what would my father do? Like the famous Reb Heschel from, what's it called, story? You guys know what I'm talking about? What would my father do? It's from Opt, right? You guys don't know what I'm talking about? Are you kidding me? Have you ever been children? You never heard of it? What would my father do? Oh my gosh, okay, we're taking this as a timeout, okay? It's a famous story. He goes into a town and he's like, give me some, like, it was a poor guy, his name was Heschel, whatever it is, and he came to a town and he's like, he goes to the town and they say to him, he says, I need some food, do you have any food for me? He's like, no, we don't have any food for you. So he said, if you don't give me any food, I'll do what my father did. Right, so like, oh my gosh, what did his father do? So he like brings him some food. So he goes to another house and he says the exact same thing. If you don't give me any food, I'll do what my father did. Like, oh, we're so scared. So they give it to him. At the end, somebody turns to him and said, what did your father do? And he said, when he didn't get any food, he went hungry. You've never heard that story before? Honestly, yeah, I don't think any of you are Jewish. There's no way. Come on. It's like, I'm pretty sure this is like Uncle Moishe and 613 Torah Avenue, like put together in a Shweki CD. There's like, that's got to be somewhere. I don't know where that is, but I'm sure that's somewhere. Anyway, we have the line of Lo Na'aleh, and I'm not going to be able to go into everything over here, but Lo Na'aleh means we're not going to go up. What does that mean we're not going to go up? Simply put, the Ibn Ezra, the Ibn Bechai, and the Nitziv says in Pshat, it's possible the Ol Moed was in a higher spot than the rest of Klal Yisrael. Meaning in the Midbar, they were all in one big area. They were all on a flat land, but the Ol Moed was a little bit lifted up. So Lo Na'aleh, we're not going to go up to the Ol Moed to speak to you because that was in a higher spot. Ah, you're going to tell me? This is brought down as a question as well. Wait a second. Wasn't it true that the Aron Kodesh went in front of them and it flattened out all of the areas in front of them so that it would be easier for Klal Yisrael to be able to walk? So if that's what happened with the Ananei HaKavod and everything, they didn't have anything in front of them, so how could the Ol Moed be in a higher spot? Okay, not a question, because obviously if we're dealing with miracles as the Aron Kodesh going in front of them and flattening out land, certainly it could leave a tiny little bit of land and they were like, oh, that's where the Ol Moed goes. So I have no problem with that whatsoever. That is not an issue by me. That would be the idea according to all of these Rishon over there. The Ibn Ezra says, as well, Lo Na'aleh means we're not going to go up to do what's right in the eyes of God. We're not going to make an aliyah for ourselves. We're not going to raise ourselves up. The Rashbam and the Chizkuni say that going to court is always referred to as going up. The Olsa Yivim Toa Shara, the Yavama goes up to the court itself. And it's been in the Tosefes Bracha. Reb Epstein brings down a bunch of proofs for this as well, that it's always going up to court itself. Pardes Yosef says, according to all these explainers, it could be that that's the idea of the Kamta of Alisa. Has anybody asked this question? The Kamta of Alisa, that the Beis HaMikdash is supposed to be in the highest spot of Eretz Yisrael. When you get to the Beis HaMikdash, you see clearly that it is not the highest spot in Eretz Yisrael. You get to the Kotel, and you look up and you see little mountains around you and they're all taller than the area of the Beis HaMikdash itself. Now, granted, it could be that they raised the whole area to the ground, R-E-Z-E-D, raised the whole area to the ground, and that meant that the old mountain that was there in the Beis HaMikdash that was so, so high was knocked down and therefore it's very low in compared to what it was. Nonetheless, isn't that a strange line? You go up to the highest spot in Eretz Yisrael and it's not the highest spot in Eretz Yisrael. It's not even the highest spot in Yerushalayim. So why would that be called Vekamtu Alisa? And he says, according to this, it makes a lot of sense that they went up because that was the area spiritually that was the greatest. It was the area that was called like the little upper spot. There was something important about going up, so to speak, to that area of the Beis HaMikdash itself. But not that literally the Beis HaMikdash was in the highest spot of Eretz Yisrael. I think that's pretty obvious. The part of Yosef mentions that, and I think it's pretty obvious over there. There's a reference over here, but we're going to skip over here. Rashi says that the words were put into their mouths, lo na le. Because what happened to Dustin Aviram and just a couple more psukim? What happens to them? Ground opens up, they get swallowed up into the ground, and they said, lo na ale. When they said the word lo na ale, it means they will never get up ever. And what they meant is, literally, they will never get up ever again. They had a small prophecy in their mouths that they said, we are going to go down into a really bad pit that represents Gehenna. And that pit, whatever Gehenna is, we will never be able to raise ourselves out of it ever again. Now guys, I don't know about you, but if I get a nevuah 10 minutes before I die, right, that's awesome. Again, I'm not saying that I would want to be Dustin Aviram, but I'm pretty much saying, like, are you kidding me? They argued with Moshe Rabbeinu. They were against everything he stood for. And at this moment in time, when they're literally going up against Moshe for no reason other than the fact that they love arguments, now they get a bit of Ruach HaKodesh in their mouths? They're able to speak and be like, lo na la, ooh, you hear that? I just had a little bit of nevuah. See, Moshe? I'm awesome.
And they don't try to change anything.
Nothing. It's crazy. And you're telling me this is the moment they're going to get a bit of Ruach HaKodesh? Yeah.
I thought your nevuah, you'd be very happy as well.
You know what? They probably were. They probably were. They were a bit of that. Now, the fact is, you're talking about high-level nevuah in order to receive a prophecy to give it over to another person. There are 10 levels of nevuah, says the Rambam in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah. And altogether, there was something. It seems like there was something that was going to be there. There was something that I guess could be. You caught it? Very good. Right? And there, I guess there could have been something that maybe, that made everything different. I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. But regardless, what happened over here? How in the world did that happen? So the Ber Mayim Chaim, by the way, this Medrash is mentioned in Midrash Ilam Deinu as well as the Medrash Agada in this week's Parsha as well. So it's not just Rashi saying it on his own, so to speak, even though that would be good enough. Lo Na'ala is brought down the Midrashim. So what does it mean? The Ber Mayim Chaim said, Moshe was trying to keep them separate from Korach. And the idea behind that was to tell them, you're different. You don't have to be punished like they're being punished. You guys are greater than you think you are. And here's a big yesod. When a gadol sends something to you, whether you realize it or not, you're already affected. Just speaking to a great man, a tzaddik, of the caliber, obviously, of Moshe Rabbeinu, but of the caliber of a Ruach Chaim Knievsky, just being in his presence makes you greater, pulls you up a little bit. You might not get it at the time because we're spiritually blind to these types of things, but being around greatness makes you great. Sending a message to Dustin and Aviram made them into greater people. Whether they realized it or not, they were raised up to a level where they received the nevuah. That's what happened to them. Just by being around a Moshe Rabbeinu. It's such a crazy idea. When they said lo na'ala, they literally took Moshe Rabbeinu's words and said, I get it, Moshe, you're trying to raise us up. You're trying to be lo nafrish atzmeinu, says the Ber Mayim Chaim. We're not separating ourselves from Korach. As much as you're trying to get to us and pull us in, reel us in with your greatness, we're going to stick to Korach. We'd rather be with him right now. He's a cool guy. We like being around that type of guy. We don't need to be near you. It's such a crazy, crazy idea. Can you imagine being pulled in, reeled in by a gadol, and you cut the line. You're like, no, 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 I got this. Don't worry. I got it on my own. I'll be perfectly fine. And the truth is, we all do things like that. We all do things like that. I cannot tell you how many times I've seen a rav, a text, call somebody, whatever it is, and the person doesn't pick up. How could you not? A Rosh Yeshiva is calling you and you don't pick up? A Rosh Yeshiva is trying to get a hold of you and you're not getting involved? How does that happen? How does that become? Oh, I just don't want to right now. So you just press the dreaded red button. That's on the right side of the phone. Right, I don't know, in England it might be on the left side, but in normal places, right, on the right side.
Otherwise
they know. And then afterward?
You're
admitting your evil! Why are you admitting your evil? I don't get it! Like, you're just like, yeah, here's my plan. This is what I do. And I have Rosh Yeshiva number one calling me. It says, don't pick up ever. Right? And that's that. How does that happen? There's like a line. I don't remember who it was. It's in one of these books that, whatever, let's call it like the Magid Walks and Talks. So here, in this book, it was a story and it hit me so hard. It was just, there was a Rosh Yeshiva who said to a boy, you needed to get up for Shacharis. So the boy said, Rebbe, I just can't get up. So he said, every morning I will call you and I'll make sure you wake up. And he did. He called him every single morning. And every single morning he called him up and he said, I need to get a hold of you. I want to talk to you. And every morning the guy would wake up and wake up and wake up. One morning, the Rosh Yeshiva called him and he let it go to voicemail. Maybe he pressed a little red button. I don't know. But he let it go in. Right? And that's what happened. And the next day, he didn't get a phone call. So he went to the Rosh Yeshiva. He said, Rebbe, I didn't get a phone call. What happened? He said, this sounds like a Rav Gifter story. I don't know. He said, God was calling you and you refused to pick up. You think God calls you twice? Now, again, that's a line that I would love to say, right? But nonetheless, I am not going to say something like that. But the concept, listen to this. A Rosh Yeshiva is calling you, a Rebbe is calling you, a Talmid Chacham is trying to connect, and you're saying no. That's our lesson. How are we saying no to this? Why are we saying no to this? What is better than that? What is causing us to do that? And the idea of what Dustin Aviram did is not so far off than what all of us do when things like this happen. Now, yeah, for those people who have ignored my text in the past. Okay, a text message might not be like a phone call, and I'm not exactly the rabbi that's going to be like that. But nonetheless, you should answer, and you should write yes and say, yes, I'm coming, or something like that. But the idea behind it is so huge. Oh, yeah.
Why is it only for rabbis and Rosh Yeshivas? Why shouldn't it be for everybody? Like, if anybody's trying to get in touch with you, why?
The difference is the connection.
I know, I'm saying, obviously, because it's Rosh Yeshiva, like, you have to answer, but...
Right, if the connection is with a great person, whoever the great person is, the answer is yes. Just usually, when the really, really uber wealthy guy is calling me on the phone, I find every excuse in the world to get out of whatever I'm doing in order to pick up the phone. Yes, you have $1 million for me?
Yeah.
Oh, you just want to say hi. That's okay also, right? Somehow, that's not my issue. My issue is not, you know, something else. My issue is when it's, you know, somebody that...
No problem calling back again, the guy
that shouldn't be! We're not talking about this anymore. No, this shouldn't be. That never should be over here. I'm skipping out on a tremendous Orach Chaim HaKadosh and a Kli Yukar that are connected to one another. It's a beautiful Orach Chaim and Kli Yukar. There's a Meshech Chochma as well that goes through here and a Doresh David, right, Rav Hofstadter, that's tremendous, absolutely tremendous over here. The last thing I'm going to go into is a Briska Rav, and it's a tremendous Briska Rav, and here's how we're going to end. They said Lo Nala twice. Lo Nala in this Pasuk in Yud Beis, and then Yud Dalet, they said, even if you blind our eyes, Aini Anashimayim Tinaker, even if you blind our eyes, Lo Nala, we're not going up. We're not going into that pasuk right now, into this year. That's not for right now. But why two Lo Nalas? Why did they have to say Lo Nala twice? Moshe Rabbeinu was calling to them in the guise of two different people. Moshe Rabbeinu, number one, is a melech. He is the king of Klal Yisrael. He had the status of a melech. The Chassam Sofer talks about this in Simen Reish Ches in his Tshuvos, the very, very last Tshuva in Orach Chaim, right? He brings down the whole idea of Moshe Rabbeinu being the king. And it's even brought down in different places whether he had the real status. Could he kill as a Morid B'Malchus when it came to this? Were Dustin and Aviram killed as Moride B'Malchus? That's already a Shaila that they ask in this week's Parsha, because how could Moshe Rabbeinu open up the ground and kill? Okay, whatever, it's done. But there's another issue over here. He was also acting as the Nasi and Abbezin in charge of Sanhedrin. He's the one of the other 70. He's the man in charge of everything going on there. There were two reasons why you should listen to me, said Moshe Rabbeinu. Number one, I am the Abbezin telling you to come to court. And if you don't come to court, then I can put you in Cherem. And number two, I am the king. And you have to come to me because I am the king itself. And kings, you don't say no to. To that they said, at first they said, Lo Nala, you're telling us to come to court? We're not going to court. But not only that, Lo Nala again says the Briska Rav, the Griz. He looks and says, we're not coming up again, even though you're the king. We don't even respect your Malchus. We don't respect who you are at all. And maybe, again, we're looking at Dustin Abiram. These are great people. These are people who definitely had something awesome about them. People that did have a nevuah at the end of their lives, even if it was something that Moshe Rabbeinu gave them, whether they realized it or not. There's a greatness to these people. Dustin Abiram's biggest problem was their lack of kavod, their lack of ability to understand someone is better than you, and that's okay. There's always somebody to look up to. Always somebody to look up to and say he's better than me. And Dustin Abiram, as great as they were, they couldn't find themselves as we called it, the B'nai Eliyav, as people who were under Moshe Rabbeinu, as people who understood their lot in life and understood what they were supposed to do, they didn't get it. I talked to somebody this week. I said very quickly, there was a shul that was traditional, and they said they were going to start having a mechitza. So they wrote me a letter telling me about what they were going to do, etc., and things like that. So I wrote them back, and I told them, the concept of mechitza is so great, and I feel like this is the idea behind it, is that in a world without boundaries, where people can do whatever they want, be whatever they want, and act at however they want, the idea of a mechitza in a shul, of everyone understanding how great they can be with the boundaries that a Kaddish Baruch Hu made us based on the Torah, is by far the greatest, biggest accomplishment that you could have in this world. And to be living in a year like 2018 and understand what it means to have borders and boundaries and to now decide you're going to put up a mechitza is a massive, massive undertaking. It's not about D'oraisa D'rabbanan. We're talking about the conceptually. What does it stand for? It is such an important concept in the world that we're living in today. Such an important concept. That idea of what it is and what it stands for, that's what Dustin Abiram didn't get. They couldn't get a king. They couldn't get an Av Beis Din. They couldn't understand what Moshe Rabbeinu was to them. And that was their, and I'm sorry for the pun. I don't mean to say it this way. Their downfall. You got it? Lo Nala? You got it? I got it. That's good. All right. Shkoyach, everybody. Have a good Shabbos.
Are you going to end all the shiur with a joke
now? No, no, no. That was horrible. No. I'm sorry. It did work, though. It worked, though, right? Marv, guys, before we clean up, let's just have Marv. We're a little bit late.